Hello everyone and welcome to Going Purple with me, Lissy McIntosh, where we get to talk about serious F1 stuff in a not so serious way. How has everyone been? It's so nice to be back on the podcast. I know it's cliche, but I cannot believe we are on the February episode of the podcast already. It's been a busy couple of weeks with car launches coming up and the start of the season approaching. It's so funny working in Formula One social media and having to plan content for many, many weeks ahead. And it's so easy to kind of think like, oh my God, it's the first race of the season next week, when actually it's really not the first race of the season next week. You've just been working on those posts. But other than that, things have been great. And they are about to get even greater with this new podcast episode, where I have had the immense pleasure of interviewing the one and only Rosanna Tennant. Rosanna and I had a really long chat, so I will keep my intro brief, but Rosanna is a Formula One presenter and lead commentator, where she has hosted the F1 Live pre-race show and the weekend debrief on Sky Sports F1, and has spent a lot of time interviewing drivers and on-track VIP celebrities. Rosanna has also worked with Mercedes-AMG Petronas F1 team, hosting their digital video content. But before all of her incredible endeavours working in Formula One, she actually had a really interesting journey after going to university and then completing an MA in broadcast journalism. Rosanna then got an internship at Sky Sports before taking a job in sports PR and even dabbling in the world of men's shoes before being asked to host the YouTube channel Pole Position in 2012, where her F1 career took off. Rosanna is a global face of F1 and very much a household name in the sport, and so I was so honoured to talk to her today and ask her all about her journey into Formula One and how she learned to trust the process of her career path and enjoy each step of the way. Now, it might be interesting to know that Rosanna's childhood dream and goal was actually to become a newsreader, and so it was very, very interesting to ask her about how she navigated her move into Formula One and into broadcast journalism and becoming a TV presenter. As Rosanna is also an FIA Girls on Track ambassador and does lots of work to empower young girls and promote gender equality in motorsports, I also wanted to ask her how she deals with moments where she doesn't feel as confident as she might appear on screen, how she deals with negative thoughts and imposter syndrome, and we also talk about how women often don't talk about their successes or achievements in fear of seeming too arrogant, and how we can unthink some of these thought patterns and have confidence in the things we do. I know that these are all topics which I have A, struggled with myself and tried to learn from for myself, but B, are topics where I have really gained wisdom from Rosanna previously when we last spoke a few months ago. And so I really wanted to invite her onto Going Purple today so that all of you, my listeners, could benefit from some of her wisdom as well. And hopefully this helps some of you too. This was a really, really interesting chat, and as I say, it's a long one, so without further ado, grab a cup of tea and I hope you enjoy our chat. Rosanna, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm so honoured to have you on here.
Thank you for having me.
Been almost a year since we last spoke, which is very strange. Well, kind of. I feel like time has all kind of merged into one now. Yes. But how are you? How is the off season? How are you feeling?
Really well. I'm in a very, very relaxed state at the moment, which of course kind of happens during the winter break when everything's been tied up from the season before. And then that's that sort of little moment to breathe, to kind of find a little bit of calm and some routine at home and see family and friends, and then get ready to do it all again. But actually, off the back of 2021, I'm sure everybody followed what was going on in the world of Formula One. It went right up to Christmas, really. So I was working right up to a couple of days before Christmas Eve. So it was a full-on year, and we had, you know, crazy celebrations with Red Bull welcoming Max back to the factory. So I went and sort of covered that. Then I was at Mercedes with Mercedes welcoming back Lewis and Valtteri, because of course they'd won the constructors. So there was all of that. Then I was sort of helping with a Formula One party, like the staff party. So there was loads going on. I was hosting that with DC. So it kept me busy, and quite a few voiceovers as well to
kind of see out
the season. So it was fabulous, but I definitely was in need of a little bit of a rest at the end
Definitely.
of what was a brilliant year.
Wow, you've been busy then. That sounds amazing. I feel like it's such a packed season. And then I can imagine you just need that rest after such a busy year. And hopefully it will be better this year. I think the season ends in November. Is that right?
Yes,
So
how
you'll
fabulous.
get
How fabulous.
exactly, get to go and do all the Christmassy things.
Exactly. I know we get used to kind of, well, you give everything to the job because it's such a fabulous opportunity, but you get used to sort of just saying yes, and the weekends are right up to Christmas normally. Well, in the last couple of years, they've gone quite far into December. And actually, I was chatting with some family a couple of days ago, and they're like, God, and then Abu Dhabi will be in December. And I was like, no, November this year. Yeah, I was like, don't count me out of any of the Christmas parties.
Oh, did you find that during COVID, the kind of immediate takeaway of the travel aspect of the job? Did you, was that kind of a welcome break, or was that kind of like, I really am itching to get back to being on planes and all that kind of
I think
thing?
I was itching to catch up with everybody because we had that really weird intro to the season. Everyone got to Melbourne and we had a couple of days, and there was a lot of, well, we've been at testing as well, and there was a lot of chat about this new virus that everyone was hearing about, and we were in Spain for it. And we're like, oh, I don't know, not sure. Is it going to come to England? Do we know? Like, and of course, so many teams are based in England. So we're thinking about, what were going to be the repercussions. We all then jumped on the plane to go to Australia. We had a couple of days in Melbourne. There was a lot of like, oh, I think we're just elbow bumping and like high-fiving and things. No one knew what was coming down the track. And then a couple of catch-ups with people. And then suddenly, obviously, that announcement came on the Friday. I then actually go to hotel quarantine because I had a really bad cough, but it wasn't
No.
COVID. Yeah, of all the times to have
God.
a cough. I very rarely get ill, and then suddenly that happened. But then we all kind of obviously went back to our own bases. And I don't know how people felt about, the restrictions and lockdown in those early months, but I do know a lot of people who've said to me, do you know what? Actually, it was a bit like the summer holiday we've all yearned for as adults. You crave a little bit longer than that little bit of time you can take off from work. And I think it allowed people to reset. I definitely got into quite a good routine with fitness and health and sleep. And of course, traveling a lot kind of throws that to the wind a bit. So it was nice to kind of get that under control again and then get ready for the season. And you mentioned the lack of travel. I then actually didn't travel at all in 2020. So it was a real recalibration, I guess. Suddenly I was back at home and I could see friends and family, of course, meeting up on like one-on-one and for a coffee and a walk, and as we were allowed to do in and around the work that I was doing at Biggin Hill. But yeah, the lack of travel, whilst I miss seeing people and actually having face-to-face interviews with the drivers and key people from the teams, I think it was quite good for me just to kind of realize I could do the job virtually. And I think for actually Formula One as a whole to realize they could do a lot of the broadcasting remotely. So yeah, it's been a sort of overused term, but a real learning curve for
No,
everybody, I think.
100%. I think that's such an interesting insight. Formula One being such a global sport and traveling so much, I always think, how are these drivers driving? They must be so jet lagged. So,
Well,
and
they're
also
lucky.
all the journalists.
Well, obviously, the drivers travel in quite nice style, and
It's true.
they don't have to worry about all of the organizing of the logistics. Whereas the mere mortals, we do have to think a little bit about, how are we going to get to the airport? How are we going to get to Biggin Hill? Are we going to drive in early? And, they're being driven and having food prepared and their fitness regimes planned out for them. So I'm not taking anything away from it, but at least all of
100%.
that sort of bureaucracy and organizing it is taken away from them, and they can just focus on driving. So they're a bit luckier. But yeah, the paddock, I mean, with a year as relentless as we had in 2021, finishing, as I say, like right before Christmas, I think a lot of the mechanics and the engineers and the people that kind of put the circus together, I think they will have needed a really good break over Christmas and New Year.
I'd love to actually ask you a little bit about your route into Formula One. And I know you had a pretty fervent dream of being a newsreader, which then obviously turned into a job presenting for Formula One. And I know that you've had a slightly more interesting route into Formula One, working at men's clothing stores and in sports marketing, and it all sounds really interesting. But I'd love if you could just give me a brief kind of overview of your last, is it 12 years?
Yeah, I think I started in Formula One at the very end of 2012. It was agreed that I would be in F1. So yeah, 2013 was my first season. But my routine was Very random. And I think probably everybody who works in the sport or in any industry couldn't tell you, you know, do A, B, and C and you'll get this result and you'll work at Formula One. I think everybody has a different route in. For me, I did a master's in broadcast journalism, then got some work experience at Sky News. While I was there, got an opportunity to shadow one of the presenters who was filming with McLaren and Jenson Button. Could have been any shoot. Very cool, but it could have literally been go and watch somebody do like Olympic knitting, if that's even a thing.
I hope Tom Daly's going to get that to be a thing.
I think Tom Daly would be a world champion, a gold medalist as well. So I went along, watched that, and off the back of that, just made some connections and sent emails, and it all just kind of followed on from there, and lots of different opportunities. But the agency that I met on that particular shoot specialised in Formula One sailing and cycling back in the day, in 2011 as it was. Anyway, I ended up getting an opportunity with them. And again, it could have been an agency that specialised in football and swimming or rugby or something. But I was just lucky enough that there was a link to Formula One. And I say lucky, I actually never wanted to go into Formula One. My brother always wanted to go into Formula One and had subsequently worked for teams.
Oh my gosh, like a power sibling duo here. Well,
I don't know about that, but yeah, very, very lucky to kind of find a way in. But with actually no connections. A lot of people are like, does your dad run a team? Like, no, sadly not. I might not be working if that was the case. I might be on a beach somewhere. But yeah, we just managed to kind of make those connections and just send email after email after email. And eventually it's all kind of linked up together. And yes, I was in Formula One, as I say, from 2013, working on a YouTube channel for a few years, worked for different sponsors across the years as well, worked with Mercedes, and then from 2017, still doing work with Mercedes, but very much employed by Formula One as well as a different client. And I've been presenting for them. Yeah, so I always forget, 2017, 18, 19, 20, it's been my sixth season. You know, 2013 is a long, long time ago to start. And even before then, I'd done all sorts of different, you mentioned the shoe shop, very random opportunity, but I took it. I'd done an undergraduate, I'd done a postgraduate. So I kind of, you have to do quite a lot. And it's still, I still feel like I'm nowhere near the top of any sort of tree or ladder. Because yeah, so it's a long old game, this life.
I mean, do you think that kind of being not so set on, obviously you had your dream of being a newsreader, but do you think kind of like going with the flow, saying yes to opportunities, do you think that took some of the pressure off this, like, I need to have this perfect career progression and now I need to do one step up? And do you think that kind of just made it a little bit more enjoyable?
Yeah, I think definitely. I get a lot of emails from people, students, people considering their A-level options, whether to go to uni or not, and then perhaps post-uni opportunities. And a lot of them write to me and say, I want to be a Formula One journalist or a Formula One presenter. And that, it doesn't worry me so much because I know everyone will be fine and everything will work out. If you work hard, you know, you'll get your opportunities and be successful. But I do think that actually just narrowing yourself from the age of 16, 17, some of these guys and girls who are emailing me, you might get a little bit stuck and you also might get a little frustrated because there are only so many slots in the F1 paddock for journalists, for broadcast journalists, print, whichever one you're kind of going for. So I often say to people, take a step back, you know, have a think about journalism more broadly or sport more broadly, or perhaps you've thought of, you'd just like to be on the telly, but what about radio? Have you thought about doing blogs or vlogs or whatever, you know, kind of other things you can get involved in?
Yeah.
So I think, yes, the sort of flexibility that you speak about, I think, is very important because otherwise you might miss an opportunity just because you're so set. No, no, this is my route. But actually you have to think, I always quote this, it's actually in my kitchen. I take it everywhere I go as a quote up on the wall. Steve Jobs said, I think at the commencement speech he gave at Stanford, I think, don't quote me on this, but I'm going to try and quote him. He says, you know, the dots all join up looking backwards. Because at the time you sort of think, you know, in my case, for example, working at a men's shoe shop doesn't sound really like it's going to be the best career move for somebody who's always wanted to be a newsreader. But I thought, okay, marketing, what do you use there? Okay, it's communications, it's writing, it's getting in touch with people, it's talking to people, that's all communication. And then I set up a video series called Oliver Sweeney Meets, back in the day. That was quite revolutionary, of course, everyone does that now, but that was back in like 2010, 2011. And we went off and we interviewed people who wore Oliver Sweeney's shoes, and obviously it was the Olympics in 2012, so we had a wonderful kind of range of athletes we could get in touch with and go and hear their story. So I would interview them, we would film them, we'd create little videos, and it was kind of I guess it's just make the most of every single opportunity. And at the time, that opportunity might seem so far away from your end goal.
Yeah.
But if you can just use a little bit of imagination and think, how can I really get the best out of this? I think that's the best approach. And obviously, yeah, I'm a bit biased because it has worked for me in the past. It might not work for me again in the future. But I did think, you know, I'm just going to give my all to this and hopefully something will come of it. And actually, even if it doesn't get you to where you're heading and what you're wanting to head to, just working hard and showing that you're a good, yeah, egg and prepared to go the extra mile, that might help you. You never know. Someone at that company might say, do you know what? We're now going in a different direction with our company. Do you remember, mm-hmm, that girl or that guy who worked, mm-hmm, for us? Why don't we get him or her back? And you just never know. So always give your all. That would be, yeah, my serious bit of advice for anybody leaving school, considering college or uni or whatever stage you're at. Just have a go. It might not be for you, but you'll get something out of it either way.
No, I think that's great advice. And actually, I think there's something to be said for just enjoying where you are now. You know, maybe you're not exactly where you want to be, but I think there's a lot of pressure to be like, I'm going to be happy. You know, once I'm, yeah, Formula One journalist, yeah, I'm going to be so happy. And it's kind
and
of
you're
like,
not,
you've got, you might have 15 years before then.
Exactly. And sometimes I say to people, you know, it's a sort of the consolidation of that particular step you've taken is as important as progressing onto the next one, because, you know, you can't be in an ideal world. I quite like a new challenge every year, yeah, but that might not be possible. You know, mm-hmm, I'm hoping I'm going to live quite long. And so
you will.
If you've got to have an extra challenge or something better and bigger, that might not be possible. You know, mm-hmm, I'm fully aware that it might get a little stagnant. Mm-hmm. So you've got to enjoy, as you say, those steps and those levels that you get to, and actually pat yourself on the back a little bit. You know, I think I've been told I should read a book saying don't be so humble, or don't be as humble as something. I don't know. I need to find it. But actually congratulate yourself and think, do you know what? I've worked really hard to get, you know, sometimes it's even a matter of sending 100 emails,
yeah,
out,
yeah,
getting 99 no's and one yes. And you need to think, God, that took a whole day of finding all those email addresses, mm-hmm, and a whole of sending them out. But do you know what? How fantastic. Well done me for persevering and going for it, because I've got that one email.
Yeah.
And that is the email you need out of all the 100. That one is the one that gets you to the next step. So congratulate yourself on working hard. And when you get to that step, as you say, be happy that you've done it. Congratulate yourself enough, but also, yeah, enjoy it and hope, you know, we always say like, this too shall pass. You never know that,
yeah,
you know, you've got to enjoy it, because, yeah, it might come to an end. The opportunity might end. The sponsor you're working for might not be in Formula One, or Formula, yeah, One might, yeah, not be there. Who knows? So just enjoy every single moment.
Yeah, no, I love that. And actually, I think you're so right. Not focusing on, it's so easy to go, well, I got 99 no's, but then it's also, yeah, like, maybe something came from it, and you're just focusing on, it didn't go exactly perfect. So I think that's great. Yeah. And actually, one thing I would love to know is, when did you kind of say, okay, I'm not going to be a newsreader anymore, okay, that's actually, I've gone a different way, it's still amazing, but,
well, do you know what? So I have recently moved house, so I've moved to Norfolk, and I'm hopefully going to be doing some newsreading for BBC Radio Norfolk. So how weird is this world that we live in?
Gosh, congrats. Yeah, so this is amazing.
Circle. Who knows? Who knew?
Wow.
I'm still going to be doing my F1 stuff, but just as a little extra part of my workload, I'm going to try and be reading the news. So,
wow. Well, young Rosanna must be internally screaming. We'll all watch that. That's incredible. Wow,
yeah,
what
so
fun.
It'll be radio to start with. Who knows? Okay. Maybe a little bit on Lookies, but you just never know, you know. And again, that was, it's funny because I've got lovely people getting in touch who are, as I've mentioned, you know, school age, wondering, yeah, what to do and how to get into the industry. But I'm still firing off emails to people, you know, please, could I come work for you? Please, could you consider me? So it's never ending. And I think, yeah, that's nice in a way, because it's just more and more opportunities being generated by the emails you send or the conversations you have. And you just never know, do you? Ping off an email and something might come back. But I kind of, I guess the thing was, and I'm sure reading the news and helping with BBC Radio Norfolk will be fantastic. Mm-hmm. But at 24, 25, whatever I was, when I got the opportunity to present Pole Position,
yeah,
which was the YouTube channel, yeah, motorsport channel, you know, it's not a bad offer, is it? You know, we'd like to come and present a motorsport channel. We're going to be doing Formula One, rally, MotoGP, yeah, bit of NASCAR. And you will be traveling. Because at first I was like, but am I doing this from a studio in London? Like, no, you're going to the races. And so it was quite easy to put the newsreader dream on ice, because, yeah, to travel the world, to be involved in sports like Formula One, like, mm-hmm, the pinnacle of just everything, I was, yeah, it wasn't a hardship, let's be honest.
Wow, well, thank you so much for kind of sharing all of that. It's so interesting. I love that you're still kind of still finding things now, still working on those kind of dreams and aspirations now. That's very, very cool. Absolutely. So
I do find it funny, like on my to-do list, I sometimes write, you know, reply to people because I get lovely emails. And then I also have, you know, email so-and-so about X, Y, Z that I'm trying to tee up. So, you know, and I think in a way, hopefully that's karma. You know, I'm still definitely feeling like I'm at the bottom of the ladder needing help to get the next step. And if I can help someone who wants to discover the ladder and wonder if they want to be on that ladder, then that's amazing too. So hopefully we can all help each other.
Now, I'd love to ask you a little bit about your experience working in such a public role in TV and presenting. I think, you know, being a Formula One presenter, a sports presenter, even a newsreader is so unique in the fact that kind of everyone can watch you. And I kind of wondered if you've ever experienced moments where you seem so confident on camera, but maybe you're thinking, am I feeling this good in person, and how you kind of navigate that and keep going?
I think the things that worry me maybe before going live or going on stage or whatever it is that I'm about to do, the only real times I get worried is if I'm not totally sure what I'm meant to be doing. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's that classic, you know, fail to prepare to fail type thing. There's no point going up and standing on a stage and you don't know which drivers you're going to be interviewing, or you don't know the topic you're going to be questioning someone about. That for me is nerve-wracking. I don't mind it. It's quite good for the adrenaline, but it's much nicer for people watching to watch someone who knows what they're there to do and what they're talking about. So yeah, those are the moments that I don't enjoy it so much, because I just feel a little bit like, this isn't great. We haven't prepared very well here and I'm right at the forefront. Mm-hmm. And if it goes wrong, I don't mind looking silly. I don't mind, you know, looking stupid, but only for certain reasons. I don't want to look like I'm just, you know, there are so many people that could do my job that, you know, I want to be prepared as possible and to do well, because there's plenty of people who could be like, well, she hasn't prepared, get her off. And there's lots of people who do a better job then. So always preparing, that's my biggest thing. And that's when I don't feel comfortable, if we're not totally sure as to what's going on.
Okay. Well, I've never experienced you having any of that. I think you've hide it very well. Fake it till you make it, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's what we're all doing. But I think it's key. You know, I have I use the word click when I do some of my kind of coaching for young girls with what was Dare to Be Different and now Girls on Track UK. And the letters in click stand for different things. You have C for confidence, L for listen, I for information, C for conversation, and K for knowledge. And the K is so important, because if you don't have the knowledge, you're not going to know the questions to ask. And in the same way, if you're being interviewed, if you don't know what you're talking about, you're going to sound a bit silly. So it's really, really fundamental to have the knowledge. And I always give the example to the girls that I'm coaching, you know, it's the equivalent of me rocking up to do the podium interviews or the Parc Fermé interviews, not having watched the race. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just actually quite rude to the drivers to pitch up and be like, talk me through it, because you don't know that they made a dazzling pass on the penultimate lap, or this is their last race in F2 or F1 or whatever it might be. So yes, the knowledge is really important. And I do think that then also makes you think, I know what I'm talking about. I'm fine. If anyone asks me any questions or I need to ask any questions, I know that I've got all the knowledge and I can and kind of conduct a very nice interview that everyone will like to watch and like to be part of.
Do you think that kind of comes with time as well? Because I know for myself, even if I'm like, okay, I'm pretty sure on the facts here, there's always, maybe it's just me, I don't know, but I think a lot of people experience kind of like this voice of, but so many people know more than me, or so many people know so many more facts than me. Even in the jobs I do, I'll kind of go, oh, this is, you know, I don't know, how many fastest laps Michael Schumacher got? And someone will be like, well, that's not right. And I'm like, oh my God, everything I know about Formula One is a lie.
Yeah.
This imposter syndrome. Do you ever kind of feel that?
Definitely. And I think the problem is, as I said at the beginning, I only started working in Formula One in 2013. And I say only, it still seems like a long stretch of time, but there are journalists in the paddock who I think have done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of races back to back, and they make a point of not missing one. Therefore, they know what's happened every single race weekend for many decades. I'm never going to rival them on knowledge. I might be able to take time and read books and read autobiographies and biographies of drivers and read race reports and reviews from years gone by, but it's different, isn't it, if you haven't lived and breathed it.
Yeah.
You're so right. You can chat to somebody, and sometimes I sort of have a quick chat with some of these wonderful journalists who've been in the paddock forever, about, you know, minutes before I'm going on air, and they'll say something, and they'll say, because, you know, when Peroni was challenging so and so, and I think, I don't know, is that a beer? No, I'm joking. But it's in like, you're literally just, I don't know that moment he's talking about. Oh my gosh, oh gosh, I'm going on air now, and someone might ask me about that particular incident. Of course,
I'm not going.
Oh, all my knowledge in the bin. That's useless. I can't compete with them. But actually, I try to see it a different way. It means you've got people to go to if you ever have a question that you want to know more about. And also, as a presenter and as a host and interviewer, I see myself more as the signpost to get people to the attraction. It doesn't matter if I don't know all of the intricacies of a power unit. It doesn't matter if I don't know how many laps Michael Schumacher led, because more often than not, I can ask someone, I'll be paired with a pundit who knows that and is employed for that particular reason. And they might not like hosting an interview. So they're there for their job, I'm there for mine, and let's rely on each other, their strengths, their weaknesses, you know, and help each other, and we balance it out. So I've, over the last few years, actually, that's been a real realization. If you don't know it, go and ask someone. But also, if you don't know it, don't wing it. Ask the person who knows it. Yeah. They're there to help you. And I found that very much so in the commentary box last year with Alex Brundle and Sam Collins. Super at all of the technical stuff. Alex Brundle is a driver. He knows what it feels like. There's no point me sitting in the commentary box being like, yeah, when I go around a right-hander, it feels like this. And when I go, no, people aren't. And also, people aren't watching to hear Rosanna Tennant pretend to be a racing driver and to pretend to know. They're tuning in so that they get the answers, and it's my job to get those answers for the fans who are watching. So that's how I've kind of worked through that, because I think there was a time when I was doing a lot of presenting on my own. I wanted the coverage to sound good and comprehensive. I was almost asking a question with one side of my brain and trying to answer it with the other, and it's just a bit too kind of like, whoa, I'm demanding too much of myself. And actually, it's so much easier, obviously, working with a team, but just relaxing into the strengths that you have, and helping people kind of, or relying on people to help you get the best out of them and get the best out of you, and then everyone's looking good and sounding good.
I think also from a personal point of view, just always being able to learn more about something. I don't think that's a bad thing at all, to kind of be like, oh, actually, I've just learned this really cool fact today. I personally don't look to presenters, whether that's in Formula One or more widely, to be like an encyclopedia of what they're presenting. They're there because they're really entertaining, and they present the facts, as you say, in an interesting way. So
with Steve Jones on Channel 4, he's very good at saying, now enlighten me, because I thought 1, 2, 3 was 1, 2, 3, but actually it turns out it's not. Tell me more, DC. And he's actually acting as on our behalf, watching at home on the sofa, because I'm sure if it was a sort of Gogglebox situation, one of us would have said on the sofa, oh God, I don't understand that. And then it's his job to ask those questions that probably people at home are wanting to know the answers to. So I really admire Steve, and his way of doing it is brilliant, because it doesn't come across like he doesn't understand anything. Yeah. It's just, it's more inquisitive. And I like that about his style of presenting. And also, I think going back to what you just said about always learning, it's Formula One. There is
so it's so technical
on literally a daily basis, and things that, you know, across a race weekend we get the race director's report, it's just his changing and everything. There's always something to learn on a weekend, and someone's fitting their different rear wing or front wing or making a change to the cooling system, and I might not understand all that, but there is that much to talk about. So there's always opportunity to learn. This year we've got new rules and regs coming this year, so that's something to get my head around. And I think I'm not an academic in the sense of wanting to go on and do more like PhDs and things. So actually, Formula One is a great space to work in and around, because you're constantly learning from these incredibly intelligent people.
Yeah.
And you're also learning new things, because so much is changing. So it's a really good, it's a sort of good thing to do instead of doing a PhD, is
how I would say.
Get into Formula One. Not that I'd ever be able to do a PhD, but in terms of further education, I've kind of done a master's in my broadcast journalism, and now I'm just going to learn from all these wonderful people in Formula One. Thanks very much.
I love it. Well, something I'd love to ask you about actually is just kind of your experience, kind of more generally, with being confident and kind of owning what you do. Now, I only ask you this, I'll be totally transparent here, was after I emailed you last week and I kind of, you know, updated you on the things that I'd been doing over the last 6 months, etc. I kind of was like, oh my God, Lissy, she's gonna think your head is bigger than planet Earth, and she's gonna think you're nuts for kind of saying what you've been doing and successes you've had. And I can imagine that being a presenter and trying to get certain gigs, etc., you kind of have to sell yourself a little bit. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but how do you kind of go, actually, do you know what? It's okay to kind of be proud of myself, kind of like what you were saying earlier on, and congratulate myself and not just think, oh my God, I'm just being really arrogant, when that's not the intention.
Well, that's certainly not how it came across in your email. I was absolutely wowed. I thought, my gosh. And I was so touched because we had such a lovely conversation. I think, was it in the summer?
I think, August.
And I remember thinking, well, I've given her a couple of ideas and stuff. Who knows? You know, I'm lucky people get in touch and I send off emails and talk to people and say, you know, I would recommend doing A, B, and C. And sometimes people don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. But it sounded like you've really gone off and thought, actually, this is, I'm going to really go for it. And I loved hearing what you've been up to. And I think that's so important, to congratulate each other. Yeah. And be proud of other people who are having success and doing well, but working hard. I think that's the key thing. You've obviously really been putting in the time and the effort. I was so proud to hear that you've been doing so brilliantly.
Thank you.
But the confidence element, do you know what? It goes back to that sending 100 emails and getting one back that says, yes, please, or whatever it might be. Yeah. You know, yes, we'd like to offer you an opportunity. I'm still bad at it. I'm really not very good. And I do think, I know there's a lot of gender fluidity at the moment, but I do think women in particular hang on the bad stuff a lot more than the men. I will do however many hours of broadcasting over a weekend, particularly in the commentary box, so a couple of hours on a Friday, a couple of hours on a Saturday, and obviously the race on Sunday. I don't know how many words I'm therefore churning out, but it's quite a lot. And I can guarantee you, say there are 100 words, I think there are a lot more.
But I think there are more.
I will get worried about 2 words I got wrong instead of the 98 that I managed to say out loud, clearly, succinctly, on topic, about Formula One. And yet I'll ring my mum on my way home, on my drive home, and I'll be like, oh, did you hear the bit where I said X, Y, and Z? And she's like, do not worry. You couldn't tell. And you're like, I knew I could. And I'll listen to it back and I'll be like, oh no, actually it's not as bad as I thought. That pause that I thought went on for like 15 minutes actually was like 1.5 seconds. No one would have noticed. It would have sounded like I took a breath. And I do think girls are a bit more like that. I know my mum went to a kind of workshop or something about how girls behave in an education system. And it's very much like you say, boys will come out of an exam. And obviously this is completely generalizing and stereotyping, but this is what this workshop said. That you get 2 groups coming out of an exam, boys and girls, and a boy will go, yeah, pretty pleased with that. Actually, you went pretty well. And the girl will be like, oh my God, I think I failed. Oh, it's terrible. It went really badly. And actually, if you break it down, the girl's ink might have run out in her fountain pen or something. And she was focusing in on that little minor moment, which probably took up 45 seconds of the 2-3 hour exam, and is worrying about that. And I think it's just trying to shift your focus away from the really bad stuff, focusing on the things you've done really well. And if you are worried about those bad things, think, right, okay, well, I really tripped up on, it's a bit like at the end of this interview, if I came away and be like, oh my God, I could not say the word congratulate. Actually, we had a lovely chat. We spoke about loads of different things. And instead of thinking of that, I'm thinking, oh God, I hope that doesn't ruin her podcast.
But you know what's so funny is,
isn't it?
Yeah, I think I would come away and be like, oh my God, I went to get my laptop charger. You know, yeah, I think everyone's just focusing on themselves, but we're all like, oh my God, everyone saw me like trip up. Like, no, probably everyone was thinking about, oh, does my hair look okay, etc.
And we all worry about those things. And I just think we therefore put way too much pressure on ourselves and think of those little tiny bits when actually we did a fabulous job. We made it through the day. How fantastic. Yeah. We fed and watered ourselves today, and good on us. Like, 100%. That's great. The small wins we don't give ourselves enough credit for, and we do focus, unfortunately, on those little bad things. But it's also, and perhaps you're going to talk about this, but it's also, a video will go up from F1. Mm-hmm. Comments will come in. It's not what you should do, but I do it sometimes. You have a quick look at the comments. Sometimes I actually quite like the critique because I think, gosh, actually, no, they're right there. I did say that wrong. Or no, I should brush up on my knowledge on whoever it was that I'm talking about. But out of those 100 comments, you pick up on those 1 or 2 that are nasty. You don't look at the good ones because the bad ones are more like Velcro. They stick much more and they stick in your mind. And you go and you think, oh, you know, they're right. I shouldn't have worn that dress. Or I did speak a bit too loudly or whatever it was.
Yeah.
About that next time, you're like, no, I'm not going to choose that dress because I got that comment, rather than thinking, how brilliant, people really enjoyed that video, that was great, we'll do more of those.
And I loved the dress I was wearing.
Yeah, and who cares? I wore the dress because I like the dress and yeah. I bought the dress and whatever it is. And going back to what you said about your email, there wasn't a moment that I thought, oh my God, she's telling me all her successes. I'd be an absolute horror of a human if I thought like that. And I think more of us need to be more like, wow, well done you and yeah. fantastic. And I also think there's a lot of competition in the mm-hmm. world of broadcasting and in Formula One. I think instead of using your energy to be worrying about them and what they're doing and what you might not be doing, and Instagram mm-hmm. is the absolute tool of the devil mm-hmm. for that, because you look and you're like, oh, they're doing that, I'm not. Yep. Oh no, oh gosh. And you start panicking. And actually, it means nothing. The reason yeah. you're not doing it is because you didn't either know about it or want to do it. It's fantastic that they're doing it. There'll be something else for you when yep. doors close, others open. And if you didn't do that, you've got more time to find out about something else you wanted yep. to do. And all the while, actually, well done him or her for getting that opportunity. How fantastic. I'm yeah. glad that I know them. I'm proud to call them a friend or a contact or a follower or whatever. But I think I'm only saying this now, and I'm probably not very good at taking my own medicine and advice on it, because, you know, I find myself scrolling Instagram and having that little moment of like, oh, that's annoying, I didn't know that was a thing, or silly me, I should have yeah. investigated that opportunity. But it does take time to get yourself into that mode of like, I'm not going to be affected by what other people are doing in a bad yeah. way. I'm going to congratulate them, push my positive energy and reaction into it, and hopefully it means there'll be something nice for me further down the track. If it's not today, maybe do it a bit sooner or later, hopefully.
So much to be said for like building positive habits earlier on there as well, especially about what you said about congratulating people. You know, it's if a friend of yours or someone you know online gets a job that you were going up for, you being unhappy for them isn't going to give you the job. You know, no. It's kind of like, would you rather just live your life as a kind of like a miserable person? I think that would be quite sad. Or just kind of go, okay, that's really annoying, but there's other, as you say, there's other opportunities.
And it's natural to feel sad yeah. about it. It's the jealousy or bitterness and feeling nasty towards someone.
Yeah.
That's no good, because you actually only trip yourself up. Because you're spending so long thinking, oh my God, they don't deserve it, or they don't, whatever it might be. Actually, you're wasting your time, because you could already be looking up a new opportunity for yourself, or sending an email to someone else about something, and
yeah.
even just going outside and getting some fresh air and feeling good about yeah. the sadness that you were feeling for not getting it. So I think, yeah, it's just trying to be kind to everyone, isn't it, really? It's just yeah. try to be kinder. And yeah, I think that's just more freeing way to be, rather than tangling yourself up in sort of acrimonious feelings. I think.
Equally, I think you're so right. It's so natural to just be sad about something and just go, actually, yes. do you know what, that's really crap. But no, I think what you said about comments as well is something that I'd actually love to ask you about. I think I, especially being on TikTok myself, I know I can read all of my comments and I can respond to these comments if I want to. I don't know how it works. Formula One, is it on YouTube?
Formula One put up a lot of videos, and yeah. sometimes I'm in them, sometimes I'm not, or it's my voice or whatever it
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
And you get comments of like, oh, she's back, I don't like her as much as him or her, or that grouping's better than this grouping. Or, and then I don't know, I must be wearing something super bland, but I don't tend to get too many comments on my outfits. But sometimes it's like, I don't like that jacket, or I don't like the hair, or I don't. So you, and then in a way, and again, this is something I'm trying to kind of get a little bit through, is you end up trying to tone yourself down a bit. And I sort of say it's a bit like trying to be a bit more vanilla, mm-hmm. because you think, oh, I don't think I want to wear anything too out there, because it'll attract comments. So I'll just go safe, straight and narrow, nothing for anyone to get at or comment on. But actually, I think it's quite important. And again, I'm only saying this because I'm learning this in the last sort of year or so, feeling to actually, if you're yourself, there's a lot more for people to empathize with and feel like, oh, actually, I really like that, because I really feel like that too.
Yeah.
Or I think that way. And I liken it to, obviously, we just had Christmas. And mm-hmm. you know, when you see all the Christmas trees in their nets when people have bought them or whatever, and they're like sucked up like this. I'm trying to explain it not very well. When the Christmas tree's in the net, you can see all the branches, but they're all very much confined.
Yeah.
And if you remove that net, the branches all go, oh, and relax out. And then you can hang your baubles on, your decorations on, and whatever it might be, a star, an angel. That is a much nicer way to be, a tree that's got all its baubles out and its decorations and the colors and things that you like, people can identify with that because they're like, oh my God, I love that color. I'm so glad you've chosen red and gold, or I really like your tinsel, or whatever it might be. If your branches are all up, there's nothing for anyone to identify with. So it's that. So, and again, it's so much more freeing to have all the branches out of the net because you're yourself rather than trying to confine yourself into all these different boxes and pigeonhole yourself and think, no, if I just go safe and steady, no one can get at me. But actually, that's not restful for yourself. You need to be true to yourself, be yourself, and just kind of, be out there for everybody to identify with. And there will be people who don't like the choice of your Christmas decorations. But who cares?
Who cares? In 3 years' time, you're not going to go, oh, actually, I should have done exactly what they wanted because, it's one person. You're much more important.
You end up doing things that aren't up your street or you're not really passionate about because you've sort of been a bit kind of, oh, okay, fine, I'll do that because that brand wants me to do it like that or whatever. So, yes, and I have to say, it's not something I'm perfectly nailing at the moment. It's still something I think about because you think, oh, if I'm a bit too this or that, I might not get that job or this job. So yeah, sometimes that little feeling and that thought process overrides me, but I'm trying so desperately to be like, no, do you know what, I'm actually gonna just do what I like doing and say what I like, and as long as you're not mean or rude, no one can come back at you. That's 100%. all it's about, really, the kindness and just being thoughtful.
That's great advice, and it's so true. As you say, as long as you're not being disrespectful or rude or whatever, have an opinion. That's what makes us interesting. Yeah. And I think that's something I'm also really trying to learn, is there's a difference between just like hate and someone giving a different opinion. Yeah. I'm trying more to be like, okay, they just don't agree and that's absolutely fine. But then just trying...
We're in a weird stage of society at the moment where we're all told you can be whatever you want to be, you can say whatever you want. And then on the other side of it, but you can't say that. So it's a very odd scenario that we're having to work our way through. And I think women in particular, there's that sort of get what you want, get this in the boardroom, get this in the bedroom, say what you want and stuff. And then, it mustn't be too like that because that's quite out there and that's not quite what women do and that's not very ladylike. And so you've got the magazine headlines telling you one thing and then society telling you another. And it's very difficult to kind of find your way through all those sort of
obstacles. A lot of noise.
Exactly. So I think, it's a tough one for all of us at the moment. But as you say, having an opinion is a really positive thing. It's the hate and just the sort of nasty remarks that have absolutely no base and no real intelligence behind them because they're not backed up by any factual opinion or facts or anything. And that's a problem. And unfortunately, we've got such a huge arena for people to put all those like meaningless comments on. And so you just have to be so careful with what you read and how much you really kind of listen to them because as I say, a lot of them are baseless. But opinions we like, and also I can learn loads of opinions because a lot of them are factual and I like them.
Well, speaking of opinions. Speaking of opinions, I really am actually intrigued about the fact that you obviously work as a Formula One commentator and presenter. I mean, you must have personal opinions on Formula One. Do you ever kind of want to let out a cry when someone wins? Yeah. Is it hard to kind of hide those opinions when you're doing your job?
It is a bit. I had a moment with the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, which some of your listeners might have watched. I'm sure quite a lot of them have watched. When there was that moment with Max and Lewis, and there was the sort of big debate as to whether Max had brake tested Lewis and what that point of the race was all about and how they came to collide. And I think I was just so cross at the way the championship was going with the sort of the games and the off-track chats from the team principals, the on-track potentially the sort of pushing each other off and pushing each other on and landing on top of each other. And I sort of, as much as it was giving us the best championship in terms of excitement and we were on the edge of our seat, I was just a bit like, oh, please don't let this have been a brake test. Because obviously we didn't know, and we didn't know until after what had happened with his brake pedal and things. And then they were like, it's Max Verstappen's driver of the day. I was just like, oh, we've got young people watching this sport. How can we be crowning a driver of the day off something we don't yet know whether he behaved correctly or not correctly? And we're trying to be, I know it's meant to be a positive sport, we're trying to show people like what competitive sports like, sportsmanship. And I was cross and I went, sorry, Max Verstappen, are you sure? And also there's also like sometimes the race winner, sometimes the Red Bull lot don't want to talk on the radio, sometimes they do, and I wasn't quite sure, and I was like, oh, I'm not sure. Like, yeah, no, Max. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to conduct this. And I think I sounded like a school teacher. I was like, Max Verstappen, congratulations, you're driver of the day in Saudi Arabia. Your reaction to what's just happened, please. And I think I said please at the end. I was like, my God, what am I saying? But I think I was just, yeah, I was cross because I just suddenly thought, oh, are we going to see a championship descend into chaos from the drivers driving into each other? And I just really didn't want that to happen. So I think it was probably preemptive in my response into kind of like what might happen then in Abu Dhabi. But yeah, that was a bit tricky. But I am quite thrilled. You know, when Esteban Ocon won back in Hungary, like that was awesome. And you have to show emotion in the commentary box, otherwise,
It'll be
what's the
like,
point of being
yep,
there?
Esteban Ocon, you are
Yeah, I know who's
the
now the winner of the race.
winner.
But yeah, it's again, it's also difficult because in the commentary box, you don't want to be too like, "Wahoo, this is amazing," because it can be quite off-putting, I think, as a viewer. So then there's an element of like you become quite aware of how you're being. And at the beginning of the year, I really struggled with that because I suddenly had sort of, it was almost like out of body because you're like, oh God, I mustn't be too excitable or enthusiastic because that might annoy some people. And it goes back to that kind of being yourself for other people and actually need to be yourself. But I think at the same time with commentary, you don't want to be whooping and going crazy the whole time because you are there to sort of explain what's going on and give the insight. So yeah, I found the beginning of the year quite difficult, but it's definitely nice when something wonderful's happened or something like incredible in the truest sense of the word has happened to show that you've been affected by it. Because again, it goes back to Steve Jones asking the questions on behalf of the fans. You're feeling the same emotions as probably 99% of the people watching if it's a wonderful overtake or whatever. So yes, sometimes you listen back to the commentary and I'm just going, oh, I need to get some more vocab. I need to go find some more words.
No, I love
But
that.
yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to ask you one last question, and that is your hottest take for 2022 and the season.
Okay, so I think I quite want as well. I quite like George Russell to win the opening race.
Okay, I like
Yeah.
it.
I just think what he showed us when he filled in for Lewis over a year ago now, was awesome. And I think he's got the bit between his teeth. He is young. He is ready to show everybody what he's got. I really hope it comes off for him because I think he deserves it. And he's going up against Lewis Hamilton. I mean, he's got absolutely nothing to
It's
lose.
gonna
If
be
he
good.
loses out to him, he's losing out to a seven-time world champion. If he wins, he's going to be the next living legend. I mean, it is going to be awesome. Yeah, so I really would like George Russell to win quite a few races. I'm also, I'm desperate for Aston Martin to come through because there's been so much chat. So I don't know what my hot take will be on them. It's just more like, please, can you just step up and
Please can
deliver?
George and Aston just can you just get on with it, please?
Just get on with it. Just get on with it. Yeah. And I'm really hoping that Lewis Hamilton is on form in 2022 and before all
And
that on the
is
grid.
actually on track, yeah.
Yeah.
I love
It's been
it.
worrying. That article on the BBC, it sort of worried me quite a lot. I don't know. I hope he's had time to step away from it rather than think over it and dwell on it and go and go and go. Hopefully he kind of put that to bed before Christmas and has had some time to really get some fresh air on everything. I really hope we see another, I'm hoping for another fantastic battle in a way, whether that's between George and Lewis and or
I
Lewis and
am.
Max. And I just can't wait for it because the racing last year was phenomenal.
Oh.
Every single weekend you turn up at a track and be like, it's going to be pedestrian or like, oh, here we go again. It was always brilliant. So if we can have more of that, fantastic. And if we can have more protagonists in the mix, even better. Because of course we were just sort of drawn to the Lewis Max battle, but I think we've got some stunning drivers on the grid. And yeah, I think it'll be a hot season. I can't wait.
Hopefully a very fair season as well. More fair racing, please.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, keeps it easier
Amazing.
for everyone and also keeps it easier for the powers that be because if it can all play out fairly, then we won't have to rely on them so much to make sort of big decisions. And obviously, Nicholas Latifi crashing was by mistake and they had to make decisions off the back of that. But if it can be just sort of crashes that they're having to deal with and off the back of that, fine. But if it's trying to decide who pushed off who or whatever, then that's no good.
Thank you so much for coming on today. It's been so
Thank
nice
you.
chatting with you. Hopefully, you'll get to meet in person soon.
Definitely. Thank you so much. And
Of
just
course.
congratulations again on everything you've already achieved. And I know you're going to go on to achieve so much more as well.
Wow. Well, what a treat that interview was. It was so nice to sit down and catch up with Rosanna, hear about her route into Formula One, her tips on enjoying your career path and the ride to your career goals, and also just to feel so reassured by her reminders that everything happens for a reason. I loved her insights into being in the commentary box and being in the paddock, and how travel has changed since COVID and how Formula One has changed since COVID. Rosanna, it was such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. You are welcome back anytime. But in the meantime, we cannot wait to hear your debut on BBC Radio Norfolk and see you back in the commentary box next season. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Leave me any feedback on my socials, on Instagram and TikTok at Lissy McIntosh. Aside from that, have a great week and I will see you all very soon.